Hi, I'm Jason, a student from Seattle, Washington, and today's indicator is 5. I've listened to 5 indicator episodes a week for over a year now, and each day's indicator episode has given me a much-needed break from studying and medical school applications. And it's probably a refreshing break from something in your life, too. More than I want a medical degree, I want to hear the air horn on Jobs Friday when I hopefully change jobs categories to doctor 4 years from now. So let's help keep the indicator on the air and make that happen. You can help support the consistent, high-quality work of Stacy, Cardiff, the air horn, and everyone else at the indicator by donating to your local member station by going to donate.npr.org/indicator. Thanks.
Hey everyone, welcome to The Indicator from Planet Money. It is time to open the mailbag. I'm Cardiff Garcia.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Opening the mailbag, by the way, is Cardiff's way of saying that we have seen your emails to the show. And, you know, every once in a while, we like to get some of them together and respond. Today on the show, 3 questions, 3 answers, right after the break.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Allstate, which now offers life insurance that pays out like a monthly paycheck. Allstate Monthly Income Term Life Insurance, issued by Allstate Assurance Company, Northbrook, Illinois. Not available in New York. Support also comes from Capital One. Capital One's indicator is 0, because they offer accounts with 0 fees or minimums, and they offer accounts that can be opened from anywhere in 5 minutes. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Capital One N.A.
Okay, the first question comes from Connor Brophy. Here it is.
I always hear people proclaim that this past recession in 2008 was the worst recession since the Great Depression. However, as someone born in the mid-90s, I have only really experienced this past recession and have no memory of previous ones. What reasons or indicators are there for everyone to proclaim this as the worst recession since the Great Depression? Is there any reasons to believe that future ones will be this bad?
That is a great question, and it's not as straightforward to answer as you might think, because the data for some of the indicators that show just how bad it was don't go back that far. For example, there's an alternative way to measure the unemployment rate that includes people who want to work but who stopped looking because they got discouraged, and it also includes people who are working part-time but want to work full-time. This alternative unemployment rate hit 17% because of the recession. That was the highest on record, but that record only goes back to 1994.
But there is one conclusive way to measure the damage done by the recession of 2008 that really does show that it's the worst since the Great Depression. And it's to look at how many jobs were lost because of the recession, and then to also look at how long it took to recover those lost jobs.
And so here is the answer. The recession of 2008 eliminated more than 6% of the economy's jobs before the labor market started to recover. That is the highest percentage of jobs lost from any recession since the Great Depression. The only two recessions that even came close were in 1948 and 1957.
But the really horrible number is how long it took for the economy to regain those jobs that were lost. The job losses started in February of 2008. It was more than 6 years until the labor market had returned to the number of jobs that it had before those job losses started. No other recession since the Great Depression comes even close to matching those 6 years. By the way, you can see both of these trends in a great chart made by Bill McBride over at Calculated Risk, and we'll post that chart on our website.
Okay, our next question comes from Tim Ricks, and it's about our episode with economist Aaron Dubay on the minimum wage.
Hi. My question is about your recent episode, The Ins and Outs of the Minimum Wage. You presented research suggesting that some businesses have offset minimum wage increases by raising their prices. So I want to know, have these price increases impacted overall inflation? And have the minimum wage employees received enough of a pay bump to raise their standard of living if prices are also going up? Thanks for your hard work. The Indicator is awesome.
And Aaron Dubay's latest paper actually takes a crack at answering these questions. If the federal minimum wage went from the current $7.25 up to $12, Aaron estimates that the overall prices of the things we buy would go up by less than 1%. But the effect on the wages of minimum wage workers would be to raise their earnings by much, much more than that. And Aaron further estimates that it would result in 6 million fewer people in poverty.
And there could be several reasons why the inflation from a higher minimum wage does not offset the raises that minimum wage workers would get. So we'll give you one example. Minimum wage workers tend to be heavily concentrated in certain sectors, like fast food. So yes, a higher minimum wage might lead to more expensive hamburgers. But all of us, not just minimum wage workers, buy fast food. So the higher cost ends up getting spread out among people who already made more than minimum wage. Plus, minimum wage workers don't just spend their money on fast food, of course. They also spend their money on plenty of things where the minimum wage has way less of an effect. So the higher inflation in that one sector, in the fast food sector, doesn't offset the higher standard of living from the higher minimum wage.
Before moving on, we should just note that debates over the minimum wage are not settled. And these debates mostly have to do with who absorbs the cost of a higher minimum wage. Aaron DeBay's research shows that the cost is typically absorbed by a combination of consumers and companies. Consumers who pay a higher price for the goods, as we've just discussed, and companies who often will simply pay the higher wage to their workers without changing anything else. But there are economists who disagree and who believe that it is the workers themselves who pay the cost. Because these economists argue, companies do in fact hire fewer workers when the minimum wage goes up. Now, we had Aaron DeBay on the show because he has looked at the issue very closely, and he really is an economist who tries to follow the data wherever it leads. But even he would tell you there's a lot we don't yet know, and you can expect these debates to continue.
Our final listener comment was in response to our episode about Australia, which was reported by Planet Money producer Darian Woods. So Australia has not experienced a recession in 27 years, and that's because of good economic policies and maybe, probably, just as important, a lot of good luck. The question comes from Anna Margin.
Hi, Cardiff. My name is Anna, and I'm one of the flat white sipping Melburnians that you mentioned on your show a couple of weeks ago, who's never really experienced a recession. I just wanted to say I would hold off on being too jealous of us young Australians for the moment if I were you, because there's one thing that you didn't touch on in your indicator, and that is the housing situation in Australia at the moment. Housing prices, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne, have gone completely haywire over the past 10 years. And following a royal commission into unethical banking practices, these prices are starting to drop rapidly. As a first home buyer, the whole situation seems really uncertain, and it would be great if you and your team could try and explain it. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for that amazing question, Anna. And believe it or not, I have actually been keeping an eye on the Australian housing market for the last few years. It's fascinating because it kept seeming more and more inevitable.
Only you, Cardiff. I actually think that this is true, that you have been keeping track of Australian housing prices.
Because it kept seeming inevitable that it would pop, and then it kept not popping. It kept not happening. So here's the deal. By the end of last year, by one metric, housing costs in Australia were at their most unaffordable ever.
That metric was the ratio of the average house price to the average Australian's income. The ratio was over 5 to 1. The average price of a house, in other words, was 5 times as much as the average Australian made in a year. But that ratio was for all of Australia. And within Australia, there were some regions where prices had gone way up and way more than in other regions. And specifically, prices had skyrocketed in the two cities of Sydney and Melbourne, where Anna lives, and in the areas surrounding those cities. And houses have been especially expensive for first-time homebuyers.
Yeah, now this year, prices have indeed started coming down, and especially sharply in Sydney and Melbourne. And policymakers think it's both because regulation has made it harder for banks to lend, and also because not as many people and companies want to buy residential properties. And so the question is, will prices fall by so much, and will investment in housing and construction activity also fall by so much that they tank the economy and end Australia's amazing run without a recession? And I simply have no idea. I can only say that I've read a lot about this. And one thing that's obvious is that the housing market is being closely watched by the government and the central bank, both of which do still have tools at their disposal to fight a downturn if it happens. And until this year's third quarter, which was disappointing, the Australian economy had been growing at a decent pace the last few years, and unemployment is still pretty low. The best I can do for you, Anna, and for anybody else who's interested, is provide you with some of those links to analyses that I'd recommend. And those will be on our website at npr.org/money. That's it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And if you have more questions, email us at indicator@npr.org. See you tomorrow.
The Indicator is produced by Constanza Gallardo, edited by Patty Hirsch, and is a production of NPR.
Years ago, Jennifer Lopez's career almost took a big shift. Then the actress Penelope Cruz stepped in.
I was like, I was thinking about maybe I'll keep doing movies, but I don't know if I'm going to keep singing. She was like, you have to keep singing.
I'm Sam Sanders. My chat with J-Lo on the secret to her continued success. This week on It's Been a Minute from NPR.